General Wesley Clark was the supreme Allied commander of NATO forces in Europe during the 77-day campaign against Yugoslavia in 1999. More than 50 days of airstrikes targeted the Serbian government of Slobodan Milosevic and his violence against Kosovo's Albanian population. Clark says the war spawned its share of mistakes. In his new book, Waging Modern War, Bosnia, Kosovo, and the Future of Combat, Clark says carrying out the war was made more difficult by Washington. He blames the Pentagon and then Defense Secretary William Cohen for a resistance to both deepening U.S. intervention in the Balkans and to planning for a possible ground war. As NATO commander, Clark says he was charged with carrying out the war on behalf of all the Allies, even when they disagreed.
Eisenhower set up the command structure to fight a refight of the Second World War. There was, I suppose, an expectation that once the fighting began, the politics would end, that they'd turn to the Supreme Allied Commander and the military forces and say, defend us. Do what you need, take what you need, fight and win. But with the end of the Cold War and new relationships in Europe, new challenges for NATO, the politics and the military art are very much intertwined, much more closely than ever before.
Nominally, you're carrying 19 countries on your back, and yet each one can opt out of an operation.
Well, this is true, and this is one of the features that wasn't clearly anticipated until very, very recently. In times of conflict or crisis, when forces are committed to NATO, they fall under the operational control of the Supreme Allied Commander. They still, however, are under their own national authorities to some extent. The national authorities have the power to hire and fire commanders. They have the power to opt the forces out of the chain of command for exceptional reasons. In practice, this came down to being able to refuse missions selectively.
Or even resources to go into them. To use one example, the Apache helicopters. Some wanted them deployed here, some wanted them there, some didn't want them at all.
The Apaches was an extremely difficult case. In fact, we kept the Apaches under U.S. command and control. My intent was that they would move in quickly from their bases in Germany. They'd flow in to Macedonia, and within a matter of a week and a half, they would be in action to help halt ethnic cleansing over the mountains in Kosovo. In practice, it didn't work out that way. The deployment was delayed by planning struggles inside the Pentagon. Once the deployment was approved by the Pentagon and the White House, the situation on the ground had changed, and it was necessary to go to Albania, not Macedonia. That, in turn, meant a larger force and a longer deployment, and there were many, even when the deployment was approved, I think, who in the Pentagon who had real reservations about using the Apaches in this kind of a fight.
You got by with an air war, but not without horrible complications and hitting mistaken targets.
It's very difficult to know with precision exactly what it is that you're striking. Even when you know that it's a bridge, intervening occurrences can change that from being an unoccupied target to, in one case, a train traveling across a bridge. In another case, a bus moving across the bridge. So we did everything we could to avoid any incidental harm to innocent civilians. But harm to civilians, unfortunately, it seems to be inevitable in conflict.
This is taken as a given in war, and yet in modern warfare, you're expected to be perfect.
Well, I think that people look to the military to demonstrate the highest standards of professionalism, of ethics, of honor, and capability. But I think most people understand that perfection's not here on this earth. Mistakes are going to happen. In some cases, the civilian casualties weren't mistakes made by people. They were malfunctions of weapons. Factors like a laser beam bouncing off a cloud, or a bomb functioning prematurely.
Or maybe intelligence failures. You hit a police station, certainly a valid target, but you didn't know that Kosovar Albanians were inside it.
That's exactly the kind of thing that happens in modern warfare. It's highly regrettable. Of course, it's always happened in warfare. I think the toll in Normandy, in the great D-Day invasion, was several thousand French civilians killed. It's washed away in history, in a foreign land, in a different time. It never impacted on the American public. With modern communications, modern media, we're so much more sensitive to these things, as we should be.
Of course, the consequences of hitting the Chinese embassy in Belgrade turned out to be more than an oops. I mean, we're still paying for that.
The Chinese embassy strike was a case of an analyst misidentifying a target. And the consequences of that were felt at the political level and diplomatic level, and still are. The United States made very clear this was an accident. It couldn't have been anything else. And it's up to the Chinese government to accept that explanation and the apology that the United States offered.
You mentioned the principles of war, which one learns in military studies, very basic stuff, and you said that this operation in Kosovo violated every one of them.
Every one of them. It's not a commentary so much on the operation in Kosovo as it is on the changing nature of warfare. We learned the principles of war from studying Napoleon. They were applied in the Civil War, World War I, World War II, but with changes in technology, changes in communications, changes in laws, changes in diplomacy, changes in human expectations, these principles become much more difficult to apply, like the offensive, maneuver, mass, surprise. How could one have really sought the principle of surprise in an operation like this when the whole effort was to prevent conflict, not to fight it? And we prevented it, or attempted to prevent it, by warning Milosevic of what was going to happen. Of course, in so doing, we compromised the element of surprise. We wanted to use our allies because bringing the allies in adds diplomatic weight and clout to stopping the war on favorable terms. Yet when you bring allies in, you suffer inevitably complications in command and control. You lose some of the unity of command that is so highly sought in classical military theory.
Former NATO commander Wesley Clark. Tomorrow, General Clark talks about his wrangling with Washington. He says jousting with the Pentagon brass in particular made executing the war against Slobodan Milosevic that much more difficult.